Evergreen Marketing Strategies. This is the Early Days Podcast. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Early Days Podcast, the show about the hustle, the excitement, the grind, the ups and downs of building a business from scratch.
Nailed it.
If you didn't hear that, you can rewind and hear that again. On today's episode, we had John D. Saunders, a founder of the 5-4 Digital Agency. He's based in Miami, the US, and we had a really nice and enlightening chat with a lot of useful resources around marketing, around project management, self-improvement, some really good book recommendations as well for growing a digital business, I think. Also networking.
Yeah, just a general nice chat about, you know, entrepreneurship going kind of from A to Z and trying to extract, you know, the useful stuff of that whole journey. So,
yep,
it's a good one.
A lot of useful resources. Also, if you're in the e-com space, we got the opportunity to ask some selfish questions and John was happy enough to help us. So make sure you tune into this episode. Look at the show notes. We have all the resources that are mentioned in here. Some really, really valuable resources. Go to weirdulo.com/podcast where you can find this episode and all the notes to it. Follow us everywhere on online, on social. Listen to us, subscribe to the podcast, and share with a friend. Maybe they find something useful in here.
So I always wanted to be in marketing. When I was about 19 years old, I read a book called Ogilvy on Advertising. David Ogilvy is like a legendary advertiser. You guys know, you know, I'm huge into reading books now. Actually, I'm working on .com Secrets by, you all know, Russell Brunson, one of the legends in the space. But yeah, so around 19, I read that book and I was like, wow, I want to be a copywriter. I was working at the bank currently at that time. So I was doing like little projects on the side, like making Gatorade ads and cool little ads and coming up with slogans. I wish I still had that folder, man. I would show it to you guys. But essentially, you know, I was trying to get a job at an agency. I did 2 internships at marketing companies, unpaid. So, you know, you're working, you're getting coffee, you're doing this, you're running around. It was a lot of work, which I was fine with. You know, I was a young, hungry kid. And then I was also working at the bank as well. And I couldn't get a job. Finally, an agency gave me a chance, a small agency in Fort Lauderdale, which is here in South Florida, close to Miami. And so I went in. I got the job. I was just doing HTML, social media, so nothing really crazy. But I was like, listen, I'm going to do everything I can to move up in this company and do well. So 4 years later, we're working with Land Rover, Range Rover, Audi. And these are the dealerships, not necessarily the entire brand. But I was able to really use social media and Facebook back before it was even people even knew about it, right? So we were running contests, we were getting tons of email leads, we were retargeting, we were doing all the stuff before it was mainstream, and we were strictly automotive, right? So cars, and I'm a car guy, I love cars, but I wanted to kind of branch out and work with some other clients to really increase my portfolio. And so 4 years ago, almost 5 years now, I left and I started 5-4. At first, I was working with an exotic car rental company, which was amazing. You know, I got to drive Lambos and Audis and all these cool cars to really test the market. We built the SEO for that company over time, and I was ultimately working on my projects as well and went into 5-4 Digital full time. And since then, as you guys can see, I'm in my home office today. I have an entirely remote team. We have 7 team members all around the world. Some of them are local here in South Florida. We have actually we have a designer in Colombia. We have developers in Ukraine. So we all culminate together through Slack, through Asana, and we communicate every single day. So we're essentially a single entity. And my goal isn't to become this big, huge agency. Ultimately, my goal is to work with a few awesome select clients and then be able to build out our ideas as well. So that's kind of like my quick recap story of where we're at right now.
What made you take that leap from the full-time employment to an agency, and how did you manage that transition, especially, you know, financially?
A great question. So when I was working there, we were doing strictly automotive clients. And on the side, I was just helping friends and family with their marketing. I was like, hey, you know, I'll run this for you. I'll do it for free. I'll build you a site. I'll help you with social media. I was just doing it because I love to do it, right? So I would work for maybe 8, 6, or 7, because it was an agency job. You know, agencies can be pretty strenuous. At that time, I had a girlfriend. I was engaged to my now wife. And so I felt like I had more time. I was able to do a lot more. And so I'd come home, hang out with her for a couple hours, and then I'd work till like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And there was one day I was driving to work, and I actually fell asleep at the wheel for a few seconds. I ended up like getting up. I was on the side of the road. Luckily, nothing happened. No one got in an accident. That was when I was like, that was my moment of clarity where I'm like, I need to make a transition. I need to make a decision. I can't do both. So I went into my boss, who was one of my mentors now. We actually still do work for him, which is pretty crazy. And I told him, hey, you know, I want to leave and start my own thing, or I want to leave and do this. And after like 2 or 3 hours, we're talking and he's trying to get me to stay. And I'm like, no, you know, this is what I want to do. And ultimately, I left. We're still on great terms and we still do projects for them, which is awesome. So it worked out. And so I think the best piece of advice would be sometimes you have to take that leap of faith, but it's a lot better to have a contingency plan if you can. So I'm a big proponent of don't just quit your job cold turkey. People have bills, you have kids, you might have things you have to pay for. It's sometimes hard to just stop, right? But anytime you're not at work, you need to be allocating time to your craft and perfecting your side hustle or whatever you're doing, because there are 24 hours in a day. If you spend 2 or 3 hours a day just working on your craft and building that agency side, you can have enough cash to supplement what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a super smart approach. That's what we're doing as well. We still have day jobs. We just can't do that. And now we're starting the second shift, basically. But exactly. It also kind of doesn't feel like work when you're building your own business and kind of putting something into something you love. It's like your baby.
Exactly.
It's really nice. How did you go about finding your first clients? Was it mostly referrals from your former work, networks? Can you go briefly a little bit into that?
Of course. So on the agency side, when I left, of course, anytime you're working at an agency, you never want to go after their clients or do anything on that side. And they were all automotive. So for the next like 2 or 3 years, I didn't work with any automotive clients just because I knew what the, you know, the ramifications would be. And I never do that to my, you know, my mentor. And so the way that I found clients ultimately was going to every single networking event I could. Every single day there were networking events here in South Florida. I was a nobody. No one really knew who I was. I was like, okay, I need to go to this event. I go to an event. I'd say, hey, my name is John. And I'm an introvert, man. I'm kind of like shy. So I kind of have to force myself out. And I would just literally walk up to people and like, hey, what do you do? And they would tell me, we would talk, we would converse. And ultimately, I was building, without even knowing about it, I was building my referral network. And then two, I was just educating myself and sharing every single thing I knew. There were so many marketers in the space that are like, oh, you can't tell your secrets. Other agencies will take it and use it, or people will just do it themselves and not hire you. But in reality, what you're doing by giving away all this information is you're positioning yourself as a thought leader in the space. So now when they're like, hey, I need marketing services. Hey, I need to do a marketing strategy. Who are they going to think of? Right. So that slowly compounded over time. And now we're at a point where we get referrals every week, like from clients. And sometimes we'll work with them if they fit our criteria. And other times it might not be a good fit, or, you know, so the biggest two pieces of that is one, network, get out there, show your face, talk to people. You can do that in person. You can do that via Facebook groups and just add value. Don't ask for anything in return. Don't say, hey, can I do your marketing? Just be like, hey, what do you need? What can I help you with? Or what do you do? And 90% of what you do should be asking questions and listening to your consumer or listening to the people that are talking to you.
Yeah, that's.
I learned that from this book. Hold on. This one right here, man. One of my favorites. I don't know if you guys have read that.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. You mentioned that you're an introvert, and we talk to a lot of people on the podcast, but also outside of the business. We ourselves as well, I don't think we're like super extroverted in general, but it seems a lot of introverted people work in marketing and communications, which is naturally a super extroverted profession, you would think so. It's quite interesting. Was it easy for you to start along and just go and work as your own boss ultimately? How was that transition?
It wasn't difficult, but it was definitely a learning curve for me because I had never been like that crazy, insane entrepreneur. I mean, the most entrepreneurial thing I did as a kid was, you know, maybe like dumpster diving where I'd find like an old bike. I'd clean it up. I put some pegs on it and then I'd like sell it to the local pawn shop. But I wasn't like that kid that was selling candy, that was doing all these things. So ultimately, I didn't see myself as an entrepreneur. So for me, I just tried to learn and absorb as much as I could from my peers. And ultimately, just become a facilitator. So even today, I don't see myself as an entrepreneur. I see myself more so as, okay, how can I take this task? How can I create a process for it? And how can I delegate it, right? So I can focus on top level and just managing and creating marketing strategy. So for me, it's really just finding something I was passionate about and being able to leverage that into a career that I could do on my own. And you know, as an entrepreneur, you can do it's a lot more lucrative because there's no cap, right? You don't really have a salary cap. You can keep increasing that as long as you can provide good work.
Yeah. Something interesting you mentioned there as well is that you actually spent a lot of time improving yourself and learning a lot of things, using a lot of time actually to learn and catch up on all the things that you're missing. Can you go a little bit into that? What hours did you spend on learning? What resources were you using?
Absolutely, dude. I would love to talk about that. So one of the biggest places you can learn is Facebook groups. I can't say it enough. There are some amazing people out there that are just providing a wealth of information for free. You can go in there. You can ask questions. If you're on the marketing realm, there's Facebook Ad Savages. There's a ClickFunnels group. There's whatever specific niche you're in, you can find a group with thousands of people talking about it every day. So that's one. Facebook groups is a must. Two, digitalmarketer.com. They have some really, really great courses. I just finished a direct response copywriting course on there where I paid like $95. Usually it's about $500 to $1,000 for a course. But again, you're taking this course and it's the full gamut. It's the most current course that you can take to date. It's not like college courses where you're paying $3,000 for a few credits and then a few days later, it's not even relevant, right? This is hyper-relevant content that you can access. And then just looking at the high-level players in the game and then either purchasing their course or looking at their blog content. So one being Neil Patel, who you've probably heard of. He's a pretty much a marketing legend. He releases content all the time. My buddy, actually, Ryan Stewart, he owns an agency called Webris.org. Also, if you're doing Facebook ads, John Loomer is a legend in the game. So there's a wealth of resources. A lot of them, when you're starting out, you can get an access for free. For example, Facebook has a program called Blueprint, where they have literally 50 courses that are absolutely free, taught by Facebook admins as well as the team. So the resources are out there, and I'll be happy to give you guys the resource list as for the show notes, so you can give it to your audience.
Yeah, I've seen it on the Facebook group. Actually, it's great. Once you get there, it's a really useful list. Awesome. For sure, in the show notes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And cool. You mentioned, how do you balance, because for example, when we started, we were reading a lot of stuff, a lot of content, following a lot of people, but then at some point you don't have the time to allocate both to consuming content and then practicing it. And then also your context is a bit different. So I think what we kind of did the last few months is just, we read stuff occasionally, but we kind of limit that and then just do it through practice and then learn that way, hopefully. But how do you balance that?
That's a great question. And I agree 100%. You know, you have people that read like 10 books a month and then they are like, okay, I'm on to the next book. And they haven't really done any actions with the last one. So what I do, and I'll actually show you guys in real time. So right now I'm reading .com Secrets, right? But you can see that I have tabs here. And so what I'll do is I'll highlight the content that I want to implement, right? So for example, this is the value ladder that I'm going to implement. I'll highlight that. And then what I'll do is I'll create a job in Asana on actually executing that in the next week or so. So for example, with this value ladder, right, I created it and then I added notes to my Asana. And now I'm going to update two or three of my landing pages with this new strategy. And so I'm with you guys. That's why it takes me a month to read a book, because I really take my time to try and use it, implement it, and see how it works. And then I rotate my books too. I'll do one marketing book, then I'll do one kind of self-help book, and then I'll do, let me see what else I have. And then I'll just recycle that process. That way I can take some time to implement it. Because yeah, like you said, man, sometimes you'll get like, just, I forgot there's a term for it, but it's when you're just absorbing all this information, but you're not doing anything with it.
It's like I guess, productive procrastination kind of.
Exactly. I love that.
Yeah, and you feel super good about yourself. You mentioned Asana. Do you have any other tools that you're using to help with project management, like not only for the company, but also like driving your own personal development?
Yeah, absolutely. So task management, I like Asana, but there are some really great ones out there. Basecamp, Trello are amazing. Trello is more of a visual. It's really, really clean. The UI is great. So task management, those are the great ones. I like Asana just because I've been using it for a couple of years and our team is pretty much ingrained. And so that's one. Two, I can't say enough more. And most people are using it, Google Drive, for housing all of your documents, all of your sheets, all of your Google Slides, which are like PowerPoint, because it just makes it so easy. You can have it on your phone, you can have it on your desktop, and it's absolutely free. You get up to 15 gigs absolutely without cost. Some other tools for managing that is Loom. I don't know if you guys have used Loom for video sharing, but
screen recorder, right?
Yes, and it's so easy because it works through Google Chrome extension. So, you know, for you guys, maybe you're talking to the manufacturer and they need to walk through like your process, right? You could just record yourself on screen walking through that process, send it to them, and now you've created a standard operating procedure that that you don't have to keep doing over and over. So we do a lot of those. We also do that for like recaps for clients and send them those videos, because now they can see not only the report, but a visual video aid to help them navigate through that report. And then
as well, does it
what's that? I'm sorry.
Does it catch the audio as well? Can you
catch the audio? It's really cool too, because it's full screen. You can even have like a little circle of you in the corner going through it. It's a really, really great tool, and it's free. The paid one is $10 a month, and then you get like HD videos and some other tools, but it's a lot more affordable than what we used to use, which is Camtasia. I don't know if you guys have heard that. That's another screen recorder, but it's like $275 for the license. Loom is a lot more affordable and just easier to use.
Right. So when you started 5-4 Digital, was it just you or did you work with a co-founder?
No, it was just me. And that was probably I feel like it was good and bad. It was good because I got to wear a lot of hats and see the inner workings of an agency. But technically, if you're working by yourself, you're not really an agency. You're pretty much, you know, you're a freelancer. Yeah. So the first person I hired was, I looked at, okay, what's the thing that's taking me the most time that I'm working on? And how can I delegate that? So the biggest piece was web development. So I found a web developer. We started collaborating. I actually found him through another agency down here that used them. They're called Helium. And so we partnered up and we worked on a few projects. And then that's when I started creating standard operating procedures or directions on how to implement. And, it, you know, wearing a lot of hats kind of taught me and gave me the sense of where I wanted to go in regards to marketing. And by hiring that developer, now I'm saving an additional 20, 25 hours a week that I can focus on biz dev. So I always think when scaling out your efforts, look at the most time consuming part of it, try and create a process or system for that, and then delegate it to that individual that can save you the most time.
When you did that, did you do it at a point where you had enough revenue and you were confident you would be able to pay this person for a long amount of time, or was it an investment in this person that eventually paid off? Because yeah, I think discussed this as well. We bootstrap this business, so pretty much whatever comes in, that's the money we want to expense on it or to put back into it. But at some point, there were several times when we were working with freelancers, whether for some small projects or to help with ads in the very beginning or to help with a few other things. And that's pretty much, again, because we have the day job, we can afford to use our salaries as well to support that. It's not really a problem for us. But we need to be more strict now, and with revenues growing as well, because just the company giving enough time, you know, hopefully things grow. But eventually, we're still not confident, right, to dedicate, let's say, a certain amount to somebody else to work for a longer time. So at what point did it happen for you? I'm curious.
So for me at first, and that's a great question. At first, it was on a project-to-project basis. And so what I'll do, it's like you said, you'll find like an Upwork or an online jobs or a freelancer.com. I'll usually do someone local, and then I'll kind of test their skill set with a smaller job. And, you know, you have to be willing. And of course, I know you guys are to spend a little bit to see how their work ethic is, see how they do, see how fast they turn it around. So I always start with one project and see how they do, because we're a remote agency. We have that freedom. Right. And so I'll test that project, see how their response time is, see how they respond to any changes and tweaks. And then based on that, we'll bring them on a more consistent basis. So for my designer, he works on all of our, I mean, developer, he works on all of our website development projects from custom to WordPress to Webflow. So he does all of that, and all that work goes towards him. And so what I recommend is usually starting out slow, seeing how you like their work ethic and the job that they do. And then you can always scale up your efforts. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to have someone being an independent contractor that works, you know, for you. You can always have them work a certain amount of time or a certain amount of hours a week and just clock that and track that. But ultimately, start out small and then just scale up.
Yeah, it's going back to the gig economy that you mentioned. And then you touched on the topic of remote teams. How many people are you guys in total now, and how do you manage like the whole process, and where do you see like the benefits and the disadvantages?
Oh, great question. So right now we have 7 remote team members, and we have some locally here and some offshore. So the biggest thing and the biggest plus of it is, of course, the freedom. For me, I like to be able to work from anywhere. I like the team dynamic for them to be able to work anywhere and do work on the jobs when they want to. We set deadlines for projects, and as long as the projects are fitting within that timeline, we're fine. You know, you can be working from the beach in Manila with a cocktail in your hand. As long as the job's getting done and it's efficient, I'm happy, right? And so I really feel like a lot of companies are working towards that dynamic because it's great. The downside, and of course, is a downside to all of it, right? Sometimes you want to have like a central location to meet clients, to be able to have them come in, see the location. It adds that flair and that fire, right? But now clients are more so concerned with leads, money, acquisition. They don't care if you're working from your mom's basement in Minnesota. You know what I mean? What they focus on is, hey, am I getting leads? And is the money I'm spending giving me a positive ROI? And I've seen that transition in the last 4 to 5 years really consistently. And so for me, because of the trajectory and what we're trying to do, we're more so focused on creating educational resources and providing those to potential students, creating and leveraging our own sites and our own entities while working with select clients. This is the best dynamic for us. And because we have all these digital components like Asana, like Slack, where we communicate every day on a daily basis, it's really made the world a lot smaller. And as an added side note, there are some really awesome companies. Automattic, which is the company that's created WordPress, they're an entirely remote team. They have thousands of employees. There's also Envision App. They have 700 plus remote employees. And there are also a lot of larger agencies that have 200-300 individuals that work well. And again, the dynamic doesn't work for everyone, but in the case of what we're trying to accomplish, it definitely works.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to splitting your time, you mentioned that a little bit. How much do you dedicate to marketing for the agency? So like building the brand of 5-4, and how much do you dedicate on client work and business development?
That's a great question. Internally, not enough. We don't spend enough time on the internal brand. What I try to do is create a social media calendar for us internally, so that way we stick to it and we block out time. So for me, what I've been trying to do is build this Facebook group so that we can create an audience and essentially help business owners develop and grow. So one of the things I'll do is I'll block out time on the calendar for internal work stuff. Because if you don't do it, a client might take the slot. They might use it. We use one Calendly to schedule clients. Like you saw when you set up the meeting, it automates the process. You can pick the times that you're available. I'll usually block out Monday and Friday for more so internal work, right? And because, thank goodness for my team, where they can work on the day-to-day stuff and I can focus on high level, hey, how do we get more work, or how do we create this project, or how do we do this internally? And so I know I'm going off on a tangent a little bit. The biggest piece would be block out that time on your calendar and stick to it.
Right. And in terms of like percentages, is it possible to give like an estimation how much of the week per week you spend just doing marketing, agency marketing?
Yeah, sure. So we really don't do any, like we don't do any Facebook ads internally. We don't do any search engine marketing or any Google ads. Primarily, it's just providing value in the form of the videos, like the Facebook group and YouTube videos. So I'd probably say maybe 5 to 7 hours, I'd say, if that. The main thing is I'm just focusing on the dynamic of the agency delegating so that I can create more time to do that, release more courses, more resources, that good stuff.
Has your role changed over the last couple of years to becoming more the ambassador and the communicator for the company than the project manager and the director of the agency?
Yeah, no, most definitely. Most definitely. I've definitely moved into a more marketing manager role of just going in, seeing how campaigns are running. We just hired another account manager. So he's managing a lot of the day-to-days with Google Ads and clients and sending out reports. And so, yeah, man, my main goal is to move completely out of it and just focus on, hey, here's a strategy we want to implement. Here's the results we need. And then having my team execute. One problem that I've had is, you know, getting out of that project manager role, because sometimes I'll go in a little bit too much. I really just need to leave it up to the team on that. So that's one thing that I've been trying to working on improving.
When it comes to social media platforms, which ones are you kind of bullish on? Which one do you use the most? Where do you see the most ROI? What are you keeping an eye out in the future?
Great question. So Facebook and Instagram, those are the top two. The ways that I get referrals and clients and increase lead flow is on Instagram. I'll do quick tips through Instagram stories. Stories has worked really, really well. We've actually probably gotten between 7 and 8 clients in the last 6 months from Instagram. And that's just from doing stories, providing value, and then using specific hashtags to increase the scope and reach of that post. So, for example, I might talk about, hey, here are some results from our recent SEO campaign. Right. And I'll just post the numbers. I'll use the SEO hashtag. And then the next day I'll do, hey, guys, check this out. Here's a wireframe of a website we just finished. So it's really just being transparent, like showing people, hey, this is kind of an inside look of what we do on a daily, and seeing that on a regular basis with hashtags, with tagging the business, people are it becomes top of mind. And when they think of that, they're thinking of us. Also on Facebook, I try to answer 1 to 2 questions in Facebook groups per day. One quick trick on standing out, because if someone asks a question, they might get 150 comments, right? One way to stand out is by using emojis in that response and just being descriptive and detailed. And a lot of times what will happen is you'll get more likes on that comment. Then the result is people visiting your profile page. They're seeing what you're doing. And I only have 2 links on my profile page. That way I'm driving that funnel and driving everyone towards joining the Facebook group. Because once they're in the Facebook group, I can target them in so many different ways. Through retargeting, through email marketing, through just products and resources just available for the group. So that's kind of the dynamic I've shifted to more. And then also doing weekly stuff on LinkedIn. LinkedIn has really, really high engagement rates. And of course, as you guys know, if you're posting in the feed, because it's business related, a lot of people comment and like it. So that viewership is there most definitely. And I've recently gotten into LinkedIn probably about 2 months ago. Yeah. Like heavily. I've had a profile over years.
Yeah, we did the same thing. We're seeing great results with LinkedIn, because you still got the organic reach is pretty high still. And then you also have the feature, if someone likes or comments on your post, then their network sees it, which is non-existent in any other social media platform at the moment. So
exactly.
Very bullish on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's been working really great for us, because we used to do Medium from the very beginning, like 2 years ago when we actually started documenting while we were still in the early stages of prototyping, and it was working a little bit. So there were random people coming in, and all of a sudden, once they switched the model and put the paywall, it almost dried out completely. Now I'm the only one who claps on posts that he posts pretty much.
Wow. So,
it's really like the reach decreased immediately. Eventually, when we launched our website, we put, of course, everything there. We still put things on Medium through their import feature. So it's just, at least there's some link backs as well. Yeah, yeah, but LinkedIn has been like, we just checked the results before we came on the call, actually. Yeah, it was like posted 24 hours ago.
What kind of content are you guys posting? I'll make sure I follow you.
Well, what we do is we have a weekly blog, which is called Origin. So we've been documenting the business, building the business from day one, including the product development process. So that's been going on for about 2.5 years. So we're up to number 98, I think. And that's on a weekly basis. All right. Imagine it's quite a lot of blog posts. And what we do is once we post, we post it on our website, we post it on Facebook, we post it on Medium, we post it on Indie Hackers, and then we go to LinkedIn. And then we post it as an article, and on the following day, I do a post on my feed just promoting the article. Perfect. And so we do that twice a week. Yeah, and you just get some organic people. As long as a few people like it, then more and more people see it, and then you know it.
Yeah,
snowball effect.
The whole idea was from the very beginning was just to. First of all, we found the most comfortable medium for us, and that was text from the very start. Eventually, we transitioned into video, and now we do more podcasts and video podcasts as well. It was just the easiest way for us to communicate, and the main idea was also to provide value. That's why we document this process, because as I mentioned, our target group is entrepreneurs or people who are building something already. Hopefully, through our experience, we try to be as descriptive as possible, to open as much as possible, to maybe somebody can find something useful in there. Again, they need to break it through their own context and apply it in their own ways, but maybe there's some valuable insights. At least it's valuable for us, because if we look back 1 year ago, what we were thinking about something, we can just refer it.
It's very funny.
Nice.
So you got a solid strategy on it. I think it's perfect for you guys, honestly. And plus, it's in your industry. It's a bit untapped. You know what I mean? Industries aren't really thinking about, let's promote on LinkedIn. You know, so good thinking out of the box, most definitely.
It's really interesting, yeah. And we also, in addition to that, have a weekly vlog that usually during winter we pause because we cannot film because it gets really dark really early here. Outside, because we like to do it outside, which is, again, similar concept. Overview of the last week or the last couple of weeks or something interesting with it. Let's say we did a campaign with influencers, how we approached it, the learnings, results, all of that. And of course, the podcast. Now we have plans to make the podcast into divide it into micro content
for
platforms, put it out there. Because, that's what we were talking about before the call as well. We have so much content that we don't even leverage the ones that's already been posted.
I agree 100%. And like, I think a podcast is one of those best ways, because one piece of content can become 7 to 10 pieces, right? You have your podcast, you record it, you have the video, now you can post that on YouTube. You take the audio, now you can put it on Anchor, SoundCloud, iOS, Android. Now you have that. Then you can transcribe it and put it on the blog. And then you can take snippets and post it on Twitter. I mean, it's, you know, the possibilities are endless. And it's one of those pieces of content where, as long as you have the video component and audio, you can repurpose it a million times.
Yeah. Noah Kagan from sumo.com, he does a great job on his blog, personal blog, actually. Okay Dork, I think is the
yeah. Name. Yeah.
He does it really nice, because actually he records podcasts, but then he does a blog post about very actionable tips and resources as well, that you can just read it, but you don't even have to listen to the audio to get the gist of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Sumo is the killer, man. They're amazing. Yeah. They really are.
Actually, talking about those tools, I know you are also very experienced with e-commerce, and I cannot hold myself to ask this selfish question, but what are some of the best tools for e-commerce companies to implement and to have in place when they're starting out, let's say?
Selfish.
Okay. So so you're saying what should an entrepreneur have when they're starting out in their store? Their e-commerce?
Yeah. Okay. What kind of tools, let's say, not just for testing and for analytics, but also I know so from your resources list, nice retargeting apps, for example, for Facebook ads and some other things. So just let's
say. Got it. Yeah, no, definitely, man. So I was lucky to get into Shopify, you know, a few years ago when it was super hot. I launched a couple stores. I ended up selling them, but I learned a lot in the process. And one of those great things is, one, you of course, you guys know, have your Facebook pixel installed. That's the first thing you should do if you launch your website. Secondly, to really look at the engagement and how people are interacting with your site, there's a plugin called Lucky Orange. It's an analytics app where you can watch people navigate through the site in real time. So if someone visits the site, you literally get a doorbell when you're in the dashboard, and you can watch them as they navigate through the website. That's really helped us in implementing some of the stores that we've done. We did a store a couple months ago for a client, and what happened was the people were clicking through to so many different pages.
Can you hear us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
We lost you for 20 seconds, I think.
Okay. You want me to...
We stopped hearing you after Lucky Orange.
Okay. Yeah. So Lucky Orange, I always say install that first too, and then watch the interactions on the site as people navigate, because that'll help you really... create a consistent user interface as it continues. One example being, we launched a shoe store for a client a couple months ago, and people were navigating to the store, right? And they were going through just so many different pages. So because they were going through 15, 20 pages, my recommendation was, hey, let's bring this down to 3 pages and just have it be a long form page on mobile with, you know, one product as they scroll. And that really, really helped the engagement and people finding what they were looking for and increasing the purchase, the purchases. Of course, I always recommend setting up retarget app. Even if you're doing separate Facebook ads, it's just a quick way to make quick cash. And the way that works for users that are listening is it sets it up so that any products that they visit on the website, if they leave and don't purchase, it's going to show them a dynamic ad specific to the products that they looked at on Facebook. So that's another quick and easy thing to do. Also, Shopify is probably my favorite platform for e-commerce just because of ease of use and scalability. I mean, Kylie Jenner, Gymshark, all those big stores run on Shopify. Main reason being is because they've done a lot of the heavy lifting for you. They're already integrated with Stripe, Shopify payments. You could set up Amazon. You can push products to Facebook, to Instagram. They have so many different integrations that you can add. And then lastly, I'd probably say the product description page is a super important component. A lot of times when you see a store, it's literally the product picture, a quick two-letter description, and an add to cart, right? So what I recommend for a product description page is, one, having trust badges, right? So 100% satisfaction guarantee, you know, 100% wool, cotton, whatever are some of the big benefits of the product. Also, listing out a long-form description with details about the product, how it works, and then having additional images. I'd say even like 5 to 8 images, 3 to 6 testimonials, and then a long form page, right? So as you're scrolling, video of the product and how it wicks water or whatever it does, some of the features, you want to include all of those in that product description page because those are the pages that people spend the most time on. And then Shopify has a few free plugins that will compress a lot of the files on your site to make it load faster to help with SEO. I can't remember the name of it, but there's a free SEO plugin for Shopify that'll help you compress those images and relabel your image files. And I mean, I can go on and on, but those are just a few kind of from the top of my head that I could think of.
No, these are a lot of resources. Some of those we use, but some of those I think we are about to set up. Retargeting in particular, I saw it from your story, actually.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Awesome. Awesome.
What you're doing really works, I think.
That's good. Dude, that makes me feel good, man. It really does. It really does.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think you're doing a great job. So how do you think actually about that? Was it natural for you to document so much and to expose so much of your life? Because you mentioned that it's not like that you're a natural extrovert as well. So was it easy for you to switch it up and just open to the world?
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, I think when I started out, I was trying to be someone and you know, do things a certain way. And I just realized, you know what? I just need to be myself. I'm, you know, kind of an introverted, nerdy guy. You know, people can relate to that, right? So I think authenticity is probably the biggest piece, just being real, honest, and transparent with people. And I show the good, I show the bad, I show, hey, this is what's working, this is what's not working. Because a lot of times entrepreneurs just show, hey, look, my Lambo. But, you know, they might be defaulted on like their business and their business is failing. Right. But they're driving a Lambo to work. So for me, I didn't know what else to do. And I figured I didn't know what else to do, but I didn't know any other way to be as opposed to, hey, let me just be authentic and show people what I'm working on. And that's pretty much it. And it's, you know, it's worked well for positioning myself as that guy.
And I think that's good advice for everybody who is conscious or not feeling confident in starting out. I remember when we started 2 years ago, first time with video, we were taking like 5 takes before we actually recorded. Now we just switch the camera, start, and we take 5 minutes, and whatever that's it.
Happens, yeah. Dude, it's so funny, man. And it's crazy too, because you'll see some ads, right? And they'll be like super polished. You know, they're using a 4K camera. It's so crisp and clean, and that's great. But ultimately, a lot of times you'll see someone just record with their phone a video and it's so authentic and real, people respond to it and they really convert at a higher level. So, yeah, man, it's definitely feasible. It's definitely feasible. And I bet you guys in the last 2 years, you've probably learned more about entrepreneurship than you would in a eight year career or an 8 year college course. Right. I mean,
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's the things you learn when you work on something that you start by yourself, you invest in yourself, you invest yourself, also in yourself. It's priceless, really.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's kind of to wrap up, what are your plans for the next, let's say, 6 to 12 months, both personal and for the company as well?
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Personal, definitely travel a little bit more. Since I have an 18-month-old kid, so since he was born, you know, we haven't really been able to do a lot in regards to traveling. So I probably want to hit a few more places this year. We've already booked a quick trip to, like, Puerto Rico. I possibly want to do Hawaii and then another international trip. We went to France and Rome a few years ago, which was amazing. And so, yeah, just travel a little bit more. That's probably one of my personal goals. Another personal goal is just to live a more healthy lifestyle. I eat pretty well, but I think I could do better. So I'm a big proponent of your personal life reflects your business life, right? So you have to be able to take time for yourself, exercise, eat well, because if you don't, you know, your business can't run without you. I mean, ultimately you want your business to work without you, but you want to be able to be healthy to bring it to where you want it to go. In regards to business goals, I want to continue to grow our resources and courses. And not just like those cheesy like guys you see on YouTube and Facebook, like, hey, buy my course for $9.97. I made $1 million, but they made $1 million from that course. Like, it's more so you see, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's more so, hey, these are the things that we've done to grow and develop and build. Here are the tools that you can use, and doing both free and paid stuff, right? Because I feel like if we add enough value, people will be willing to pay for that as well. And then the last piece of the business goal is just to bring on maybe two or three high level clients that we can really partner with and build. And lastly, just working on some of our internal projects and getting those to fruition as well.
Right. And as far as I know, I think also you're interested in the real estate market, right?
Yeah, man. I'm really trying to break into real estate and buying a few properties and renting those out, because that's, as you guys know, that's the biggest way to generational wealth and building that out. I actually just finished this book, pretty amazing, called Millionaire Real Estate Investor. You guys should check it out by Gary Keller, co-founder of Keller Williams. And
I saw it on your story. I think we wrote about it. That's why I asked you for the title, and I got it after that.
Nice. How'd you like it?
I've just barely started, then moved to another one that was more relevant for the time. So
got it.
On my laptop, so it's there.
No worries. You can always go back to it, man. That's a great thing.
Good to know about it.
Nice.
All right. Well, John, thanks for being on the show. Where can people find out more about you, follow you, but also 5-4 and other things, links you want to plug in now?
No, of course. Yeah. You guys can find me on pretty much any social media platform at John D. Saunders. That's John D as in dog, S-A-U-N-D-E-R-S. Feel free to DM me. I answer any and all questions. You will never see a DM unread by me. It might take a day or so, but I will respond. Also, my personal website is johndsaunders.co. That's C-O. You can get my free resources, guides, downloads there. And then lastly, I have a private Facebook group called Digital Marketing Mastery Lounge. Do a search for it on Facebook. Feel free to join. There's a ton of tidbits and resources there for you for free. And yeah, man, I don't want to run down the list, but I think with those three, it'll give your audience some solid resources to work from.
Yeah, I think so. I can confirm as well, because I'm a member of the Facebook group, and it's
awesome.
I think it's really nice. For me, it's a bit overwhelming, all the Facebook groups, but actually having the list of resources, and I think you've done a great job in organizing the content so that if you're just like, if you cannot follow all the discussions, you can easily go and find out the things that you're actually interested in. I think it's a very good example of how you run a Facebook group and not just...
Oh, appreciate that, man. Appreciate that. Yeah, no doubt. I actually learned a lot of those tips from... there's a guy on Facebook. He has a group, of course. His name is Andrew Kroeze, I think I used to pronounce it. K-R-O-E-Z-E. So I got a lot of tips and tidbits from him as well. He's got a great resource and courses. So yeah, man, that's pretty much who I am.
Perfect. It was a pleasure talking to you. Really enjoyed it.
It was a pleasure.
Awesome, guys. Likewise.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. Really appreciate it. It would really help us if you share, like, follow, rate, recommend, leave a comment or any of that sort of thing on our podcast. It helps us to reach a broader audience. If you enjoyed this episode, share it also with someone who might find it useful. There were a lot of resources in this one, and especially for those building an e-commerce business, I think this will be a very valuable episode. So if you think of somebody, spread the word. Thank you so much for listening. One more thing before we go. If you want to support us, you can check out what we're doing. We do the non-iron performance dress shirt. And this is a dress shirt that you really don't have to think about it when you wear it. It's super stretchy, it's super comfortable. It gets out of your way so you can focus on doing the things that matter to you. Go and check it out. Check us out and what we do at weardulo.com. That's weardulo.com. And if you like it, maybe you order a shirt. Well, no pressure there. Thanks again. Until next time. Bye-bye.